I wanted to share my conversation with John Sebastian. He got together with his old friend and guitar legend Arlen Roth to re-record his songbook from his Love and Spoonful through his solo years, and they released an album. Arlen Roth is one of the most influential guitarists of all time. He's toured and recorded with more people than I could mention, but the list includes Dylan, John Prine, Phoebe Snow, Lee Von Helm, Simon and Garfunkel. And as you'll hear, his relationship with John goes back a long way. So I started my conversation with John talking about their friendship and how this album came to be.
We've known each other almost that long, really probably about 30. We've been playing quite frequently together, sort of at the last minute. Things would come up. It's a benefit. Somebody's house burned down. And all of a sudden, I'd be on the stage with Arlen. We're both guitar nerds. And back, we were both New Yorkers and could go downtown and find weird swap meet joints that had broken six-string basses that we would take home and fix. And so that was a sort of a fairly constant thing of ours. And we got together this one afternoon just for fun and we're playing together. And I said, you know, Arlen, I don't think I ever got to say what a great thing I thought your project of acoustic Rolling Stones. And it all sounds so unbelievable. And instrumental Simon and Garfunkel. So he said, John, are you saying that you've never made one of these albums? And I said, no, I've been totally afraid to repeat anything the Spoonful did because that just screams gonna suck all over it. And he said, well, we should do this. We should do an album of Spoonful tunes. That became a visit to a nearby studio that I have recorded in since going back to my jug band days in the 90s. So it was a very comfortable situation. And we started to record. And then let's try this one. Just kept doing more. And there was a point at which I began to think we had something. Then all of a sudden COVID hits and we can't work together anymore. But both of us, he and I have both had lots of different careers. We've had the one where we're the guy with the light on, and then there's jobs where you're the accompanist. And I've certainly done both and really enjoy both jobs. So it made it very easy for us to go, okay, this is just like when Garfunkel says, here's this track. Could you put an extra run of a finger-picked guitar or something on there? And Arlen would shoot it back to him. Or somebody calls me and goes, we need this big harmonica thing, and I do that. So we just began repeating that kind of a technique. So we got near the end, and things are happening that just are so fortuitous. Just by chance, Jeff Muldor moved into an adjoining town. I said, Jeff, could you come over here and tenor me on jug band music or something like that? And sure. So all of a sudden I had my favorite. If there's anybody I was imitating, especially on something like Daydream, it was him. So I really enjoyed being able to sort of share the sonic stage with him. And then wasn't a few weeks later, Maria came through town because she was going to do a gig at the local. I always go and beat her Mississippi John Hurt when she's singing some of her tunes. And I said, would you stop by the studio? And bingo, we suddenly had a wonderful second vocal for stories we could tell.
Do you know Maria from the Jim Queskin Jug Band? How did your friendship start?
Before the Jim Queskin Jug Band, there was her participation in a jug band in New York called the Even Dozen Jug Band, of which I was also a member. We did four gigs. The Queskin Band came through town. Jeff Muldor swept Maria back up to Cambridge. We never saw her. The band was gone. She was really way ahead, the chief attraction. All the rest of us were all funny looking Italians and Jews. So it was such a loss that we kind of closed the thing down. So yeah, that's how far back, I guess, what is that, 63 or 4 or something like that is how far I go back with Maria.
Your dad played harmonica. You grew up in this rich music scene in Greenwich Village. Could you tell me some about the importance of both those things in shaping you and your music?
Absolutely fundamental. I don't know who I would have been or what I would have done if I wasn't born there. That was such a giant opportunity for me to be able to walk down to the ground floor of the apartment building, walk out the front door, and be in Washington Square. You understand what that meant on a Sunday in 1962? That was a remarkable explosion of music. There was such a diversity going on in that square. If I walked over to one corner, it's bluegrass at a million miles an hour. Then across the street, there's the guys in the matching shirts, and they're trying to be kind of a Kingston Trio idea. Then I'm over with the white guys that want to be Lightnin' Hopkins in another section. So I was getting exposed to all of that. I think I probably met Maria there before I even met her again in the jug band in this rehearsal on 14th Street sometime in 62 or something.
And was it your father who taught you harmonica?
You know, you can't help but take it in through the pores when a man is practicing 6-8 hours a day. Those are real numbers. And mostly with a pianist, and then once a week, the tuner. I was fascinated by the tuner. I was fascinated by how the beats would stop beating when he got it right, and all of that stuff. Years later, a friend of my dad said, "When did you know your son was gonna be a musician? Was it when you heard him play guitar?" And Dad said, "No, it was when I heard him tune the guitar." So, yeah, always my dad had the coolest thing to say about almost anything. This was such a worldly, wonderful man, really terrific. He never, never, ever said, "Now, son, you're going to be a great harmonica player like your dad." No, because he'd had classmates in college who were, you know, law students, and then he goes to visit them 10 years later, 15 years later, and they're pumping their kid to go into law school. And he said, "I really, really have no need to do anything like that."
You have obviously had an enormously successful career with the Love and Spoonful as the leader of the band. You've also been a session musician for a very eclectic group of great artists. The Doors, Dylan, Lauren Nero. Is that more fun in a way? Is the pressure off? Is there one that is more rewarding than the other?
Boy, that is a hard question to answer, honestly, because there are times, for example, when I was working with Fred Neil, where you go into a session and you don't know what's going to happen. You've rehearsed a lot of the tunes and everything, but as far as really knowing what's going to go on, you can't know. Whereas when you've written the song, you're already so far into the details that somebody needs to smack you around. I usually have people like that, by the way, employed within my sphere. Yanofsky was that. And Arlen, the wonderful connection that Arlen has with Zal Yanofsky's work.
Zal Yanofsky was lead guitarist for the Love and Spoonful.
Yeah. Arlen very often would do a little lick while we're doing this little two-guitar thing, and I'd go, what was that? And he goes, Zali plays that in the last verse. He throws it in. It's in a different place. But you know, it was that kind of thing that he was very often referring affectionately to that body of work.
You had such immediate and repeated success with the Love and Spoonful. You had one hit after another. How did you decide to walk away from that?
It was really easy. It was really easy because after Zali left, there was an attempt to replace him with another good guy friend of ours. It just never had. You can't replace somebody like him. So for me, the impetus to continue with the band was disappearing. And there was also another factor here, which was that I had enjoyed playing with these three guys exclusively. Any idea I had to be filtered through that group of players, which usually worked wonderfully. But there was a phase where I started to go, gee, you know, this might need, I don't know, three background singers, or this might need some women singing here in this section. Or what if you made a record where you just let the musicians that you picked serve the song, just that song? So maybe you'd have 12 different sessions to get this to happen. By this time, a number of my contemporaries had great success, both as single artists and as components of a bigger picture like Crosby, Stills, Nash. That grew like moss. It didn't happen all at once. So I thought, I would love to have Mac Rabinac play on this song that's about New Orleans. That's the flavor. Anyway, that was really another impetus to move from the four-piece band onto at least a flexible thing. That's part of the magic of music.
You talked before about getting Maria Muldaur to sing on Stories We Could Tell. Do you remember writing the song? What inspired it?
Oh, certainly. That just came out of the experience. That's an experiential song, not a imaginary. Reminiscing in 1975 is different than doing it in 2020.
I know. It's interesting that you wrote it. You were still so young.
Yeah, but I mean, I had done the time. That's the thing. I always say, we never worked as hard as Fats Domino, but we were working every day. And we were traveling every day. We were in buses. We were in DC-3s. We actually owned a DC-3. Now, that's old-timey. Talking to myself again, wondering if this traveling is good. Is there something else doing we'd be doing if we could? But all the stories we could tell. And if it all blows up and goes to hell, I can still see us sitting on a bed in some motel and listen to the stories we could tell.
Remember that guitar in that museum in Tennessee? Nameplate on the glass brought back 20 melodies. And the scratches on the face rolled of all the times he fell, singing all the stories he could tell.
rings like a bell. And I wish that we could sit back on a bed in some motel
and listen to the stories it could tell.
Tracking down your every night and singing for a living beneath the brightly colored lights. And if you ever wonder why you ride that carousel, you did it for the stories you could tell. And all the stories we could tell. And before we have to say our last farewell, I just wish that we could sit back on a bed in some motel and listen to the stories we could tell. Yes, I wish that we could sit back on a bed in some motel and listen to the stories we could tell.
John Sebastian and his old friend Maria Muldaur on vocals, Arlen Roth on guitar, Stories We Could Tell from the new album John Sebastian and Arlen Roth Explore the Spoonful Songbook, which actually includes some of his solo work like Stories We Could Tell.